Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation.
This week, we consider the plight of Oklahoma's 33,000 or so state workers who are in the crosshairs of Governor Kevin Stitt's plan to jettison the state merit protection system, which regulates hiring and firing practices.
The state's current civil service system took root in the late 1950s, a response to cronyism that produced excessive patronage and backroom political deal-making. The goal was to create a more qualified, more professional workforce to carry out legislatively enacted policies, procedures, and initiatives, minus the political meddling.
The new system established professional hiring and firing procedures that gave state employees the right to due process protections. State employment was never about getting rich financially, but with reasonably good benefits and pensions, state employment remains a viable path for those passionate about child welfare or mental health care or public education or myriad other for the public good services to invest their lives in helping create a better Oklahoma for all.
In the merit protection system, established under then-Governor George Nye in 1982, provided job security, ensuring trained professionals could not be replaced by Senator so-and-so's nephew under threat that legislative funding could be cut.
After only 1 year on the job, Governor Stitt has concluded the state's civil service system is broken. But is it?
Does the system truly need to be modernized to meet the demands of 21st century workers in state government?
Or are the issues more likely the result of draconian budget cuts and hiring freezes that cut the number of state workers nearly 10% since 2009? At the same time, the state's population climbed from 3.75 million to 4 million.
Or are proposed changes contained in bills authored by Senate President Pro Tem Greg Treat and Edmond State Representative Mike Osborne really more about politics and the publicly stated antipathy of current state capital powers that be toward organized labor, in this case, state workers' unions?
Patrick J. Hall, I go by Pat. My affiliation is I'm a lifetime member of the Oklahoma Public Employees Association and the first employee they were ever sad to hire.
You realize that this is now beginning to sound like a deposition, which you've probably done more than a few times.
or a eulogy.
Well, give us your overall, as somebody who's been at the Capitol for these many decades.
40 years.
Give us your assessment, particularly in light of the governor's, it's actually not the governor's proposal, it's the Senate president's proposal to do away with the Merit Commission. What is the state of the public employee realm in Oklahoma today, and how have we gotten here?
Well, and thank you for having me on. I mean, I love talking about the Oklahoma Public Employees Association, still near and dear to my heart all these years. I left there in 1996 to take over the Oklahoma Democratic Party, but I'm still loyal to them. I think there's a great misunderstanding today about what the governor's proposed, what Senator Treat is advocating, and Representative Mike Osborne is actually carrying the bill. I think there's a perception by a lot of scared state employees that they're going to abolish a merit system, meaning that we're going to go back to the patronage system. We're going to go back to the early days of Mr. Rader in the Department of Human Services, where a state senator has to write a letter for you to get a job at DHS or Corrections or the Highway Department. In fact, in 1959, when they created a merit system, the last two states that didn't have one were Indiana and Oklahoma, and they were both flower fund states. What that means is if you wanted to keep your job as a state employee, you had to give a little bit of money into a flower fund that agency directors could use.
Gotcha.
So today, this perception by long-term state employees is we're going to abolish the merit system. Therefore, I'm going to be an at-will employee. They don't like the color of my hair. They don't like how I walk. They don't like that I parked right or I parked wrong or I'm still a smoker. I can be terminated without any due process hearing. That's not actually what the governor's advocating.
So what are they missing? What are the nuances?
Well, the nuances are that this new administration has no experience in state government. They look at it as running Gateway. What they need to look at it is similar to the military. Every soldier, seaman, marine Air Force person has due process right, be it a private or a general. They have the right to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. If they are terminated or disciplined, they have the right to have an attorney paid for by the government to represent them in a court of law of their peers. Now, that's what the original Merit Protection Commission was designed at. It didn't work that way. It's got all outside lawyers, outside arbitrators. But you know what? Probably the state employee wins 40% of the time before the Merit Protection Commission. I mean, no system run by the government can you expect the employees to win 100% of the time or even 75% of the time. Because, Arnold, if they did, they changed the system. They changed the system to unbalance it so the employees lose more than they win. But, you know, what we're doing in Oklahoma by having a merit protection system, we're not going to district court. We're not having the Oklahoma Public Employees Association have a string of lawyers employed to do nothing but file grievances and go to district court. So a lot of times other public entities like teachers, that's what they'll do. But in the state of Oklahoma with 33,000 state employees, those that are under a merit system, they get to have their day in court without having to hire a lawyer or without having to go to district court. OPEA proved in an interim study that if they get rid of this system and have an at-will system, the cost of court cases will just go through the roof. And I don't think the attorney general or anybody that's looked at this is advocating going to district court.
So what are the changes then that are proposed, and what do they in reality mean?
Well, the governor in his State of the State proposed that every new employee would be hired unclassified, meaning that they would not have the same due process rights. Also meaning that the agency administrator didn't have to go through what used to be called the Office Personnel Management, and they didn't have to go through a qualified list. So here's the person that's going to be the most damaged this process if it would become enacted, the veteran. We have a Veterans Preference Act in Oklahoma. Veterans have always been, if all things are equal, if you and I are equal applying for a job, I'm a 20% disabled veteran, I would have a leg up on you for a returning veteran to hire them. You only get to use it once. You don't get to use it, you know, several times. But in fact, to get that veteran back to work, the state of Oklahoma has been an outstanding employer. That goes out the door. I don't think the governor thought about that. The veterans organizations should be opposed to this. The second thing it does is it allows a agency director, and we know now the six biggest agencies are directly controlled by the governor, not controlled by a volunteer board. It will allow those agency directors to choose who they want. I don't think they don't have to consider gender. They don't have to consider people of color. They'll just be, they can just say, I want to hire nothing, you know, I want to hire nothing but white males. And I don't know there's anything we could do about it. Now, that's the abstract. That's the furthest thing. I don't think the governor intended that. I think what the governor thinks is that we can cut the red tape on how we get an employee in the door and get them trained and get them paid. We're already doing that. To get rid of a merit system is simply telling the people of Oklahoma, we are not going to hire the best and the brightest based on merit. And with a veteran's preference, we're going to get to hire who we want and who we like. Bad system.
Well, with all those red flags you just raised, and with the sense that what this the system has allowed the state to do over the years, which is to stay out of the courthouse and costly litigation, what's the motivation here for this? And why would the Senate President pro tem be carrying that legislation?
Well, neither one of them have ever been a state employee, number one. I don't know that either one of them have ever been a government employee.
State employees now, but yeah, in a different way, I suppose.
But I know Senator Treat very well, and I don't believe he's ever worked except for Senator Coburn. He's worked for the federal government, for Congressman Coburn and Senator Coburn. I think it goes back to they don't know what they don't know. I think it's back that the agency directors, we don't have the longtime agency directors out there or the longtime Oscar Jackson that ran Office Personnel Management or his predecessor, Jim Thomas, that did such an excellent job that went to OPEA and we sat in the rooms together and we worked out these problems without going to the legislature or going to court. I think that what the governor is proposing is a trial lawyer's dream. You know, now I've got brand new clients that are going to be in there, and we're going to go after judgments. We're going to sue the court, the state for discrimination and all these other things. And it's going to be, and the state's going to have to pay a lot of money for state's attorneys. And it's just not, the system is not broken is what I'm trying to say. I think before it's over with, the governor, who has not met with the Oklahoma Public Employees leadership, I think that when he meets with them, and thanks to what Representative Osborne's doing and what Senator Treat knows, I think when this session is over, we may see a system that looks similar to the military, which gives every employee, classified or non-classified, due process rights.
So actually, in your view, a better system than we currently have.
Yeah. What we currently have is the merit system blocks excellent employees from receiving bonuses or receiving promotions in some cases. Because if there's a promotion in state government, you still have to go through a process, and the process could be cumbersome. It could, you know, it could take 90 days to 120 days or longer to promote somebody in the classified system. If you go to an unclassified system, there might be some bias and some prejudices in it, but I'm sure the process to promoting people will be simpler. I mean, years and years ago, when you were a Tulsa Tribune reporter, and we were much, much younger, we actually had an overhaul in 82 of the merit system, and we created this new system, and we created it also because the federal government demanded it. The other thing that I asked Sterling Zerley, the excellent executive director of the Oklahoma Public Employees Association, the other day, what about the federal strings attached to a merit system? Because when it was created in 59 and then retooled in 1982, it was because the federal government demanded it. They demanded their DHS dollars coming into Oklahoma would only go into a merit system. They wanted that child welfare worker, they wanted a development disability worker, they wanted them to be qualified. They wanted the federal dollars to follow qualified employees. And that's how it worked. Department of Transportation, not so much. Corrections, not so much. But Health Department, the Mental Health and Substance Abuse, they wanted to make sure their federal dollars were going into a merit system. If that's changed today, I don't know.
Well, these things don't just sort of come out of thin air. I can't imagine that Governor Stitt, who's a newcomer to politics, and even Senator Treat, were sitting around brainstorming, and somebody came up with the idea that we need to do away with merit protection. You've been around that building a long time. Where does this come from?
Well, every governor can't understand why they can't hire and fire who they want. Once they get into office, now, Governor Stitt's the first governor to never have a political background. Now, Governor Walters did not have a political background, but Governor Walters worked for the Health Science Center. So he did have an understanding of state government, but he had really veterans around him that understood, like Robert White and others that, you know, somebody said, well, they were bureaucrats. No, they weren't. They were very, very bright politicians that understood, Governor, you can't throw this system out if you don't have something pretty perfect to replace it with. I think what's happening is Governor Stitt's probably talked to enough agency directors and his new people, and they're telling him, you know, here's a barrier to being a top 10 state, which in one of the barriers, I'm sure, is the fact that I, as an agency director, cannot hire and fire who I want. I don't think agency directors know what they're asking for. They don't want to be deposed every day in a district court case. If they think they're immune, they're not. OPEA is not stupid. They're going after the head of the beast. If they sue somebody, they're not going to sue that supervisor. They're going after that agency head every time.
So we talked to Pat, and I was a little unclear when we're talking to him, so I don't know if maybe you can offer, because he was like, well, it would be like the military, you know.
Well, I thought he's indicated he would like for it to be like that they could tweak it to be more like military justice, where everybody from the actual commanders to, you know, the grunts,
the rank
all
file.
Are covered. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's what I wasn't clear on. So I was like, is that what he's saying it'll be like, or that's what he would prefer the system be like?
Yeah, if we're going to tinker with it, that's what I would like for it to be. That's the way that I took what he said.
But that's not even really part of the conversation right now. I mean,
no.
The conversation right now isn't about tinkering with it. It's about eliminating it altogether.
Now we're talking with Ryan Kiesel, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oklahoma. Kiesel served three terms in the Oklahoma House of Representatives, elected while he was still in law school, representing Seminole in Seminole County. Yes, you heard that right. He represented a rural district in Oklahoma as a Democrat, winning re-election twice.
And you know, I think that even though we shouldn't always draw lessons from the federal government as to, you know, what the state of Oklahoma should be doing, I think in this instance, the impeachment trial of President Trump demonstrates what happens whenever you have political interference in you know, largely bureaucratic positions, you know, people that are civil servants, and you know, whether that's in the diplomatic corps or what. I mean, since 2016, one of the things that really saved our society and saved our country from itself have been the civil servants that have, you know, stood in these state or in these federal agencies and made sure that things kept working and pushed back on administration and have pushed back, you know, to some success to administration officials who wanted to do something that was just, you know, wildly out of line with a mission of an organization or would have meant, you know, catastrophic failure of government services for thousands, if not millions of people. That same thing happens in Oklahoma all the time. I mean, I think that we hear a lot about, you know, the failure of state government in Oklahoma, but it's kind of remarkable. And if you see the state employees right now that have, you know, gone, you know, many of them, if not most of them, a decade plus without any sort of a significant raise, then whenever they do get a raise, it's paltry. They've really kept the state of Oklahoma running in a period of budget crisis. And we don't talk a lot about budget crisis even in 2020 because we're saying, oh, we're kind of revenue neutral. I mean, we'll see what happens with the revenue after we get, you know, new figures in with, you know, price per barrel of oil hovering, you know, low 50s.
But when you're 40s. Recovering from 10 years of draconian cuts,
yeah, you're,
you know, a flat budget isn't getting you anywhere.
That's right. A flat budget. I mean, you're still down, you know, several pints of blood. And so, yeah, I do think that we have this situation where we take for granted the role that the important role that civil servants play in Oklahoma, state employees play in the administration of government services in Oklahoma. And here's an example, and this is kind of a top level example that necessarily wouldn't necessarily apply to the Merit Protection Commission, but you know, recently the governor in a state of the state says that the new director of the Department of Corrections has informed him that the $1 billion request that had come
under,
had come under the last director, was no longer needed. And, you know, one might think, well, maybe that's a result of these important criminal justice reforms that have happened, but that's not the case. Maybe one would think that it's because we've, you know, finally dipped below 25,000 in inmates for the first time in many, many years. Also not the case. The $1 billion infrastructure needs within the Department of Corrections are for things like locks and
doors and roofs.
Yeah. I mean, the dilapidated condition of infrastructure within the Department of Corrections is embarrassing and it's frightening. And when you have a director that's saying we need $1 billion to fix this, and then that director is pushed out largely as a result of a governor who's wanted to consolidate more and more power in the hands of a unitary executive, which is just wild for, you know, the party that is, you know, ostensibly the party of small government is undergoing in Oklahoma, in all places, a massive consolidation of power into the hands of one person.
It's incredible.
And so the only thing that has changed between the $1 billion request and now the Department of Corrections not having a $1 billion request is a political appointment and political interference. Now, you can say, well, that's the governor's prerogative to decide that he wants bad information, right? That maybe that's it. Maybe the governor has a prerogative to say that. But think of that kind of political interference that happens in the actual delivery of services, whether that's a corrections officer, maybe a corrections officer who decides, you know, we're at 60% or less staffing. I've watched corrections officers die because they're driving to to work after working doubles, and they fall asleep on their way home or on their way to work. Mm-hmm. Maybe the corrections officer gets fed up with that and decides to go to the Capitol and talk to their lawmaker and other lawmakers about the terrible state of being a correctional officer in the state of Oklahoma. Well, if we move away from a system where that person has that right to educate their lawmaker and in a way educate us as the public, because they're on the front lines. But if there's no protection out there for them to be able to do that, not be retaliated against, because what they're talking about is moving all those folks to at-will positions. Now, anybody in Oklahoma can tell you that's been in an at-will position. At-will is exactly what it means. And will doesn't mean an explanation. It means you're fired. And, oh, can I have an explanation? No. Unless you have an email or a video recording of someone saying that a particular termination or a negative action with regard to somebody's employment is directly related to or is the result of a legal form of discrimination, race, religion, national origin, something like that that's constitutionally protected, you're SOL, man. You are just out of luck and you're gone. And that just robs all of us as Oklahomans of the kind of public service that we've all kind of, again, come to take for granted. When it's gone, if and when it's gone, I promise you Oklahomans will realize it. They may not realize that the deterioration of services or the lack of information about what's actually happening in our state agencies, they may not realize that that's because of the elimination of merit protection. But it'll have a huge impact on that.
So what would be the incentive for somebody to want to go to work for the state of Oklahoma with relatively low pay, little chance of getting any sort of increase in pay, if it were not for the fact that there is merit protection in place and there are benefits mm-hmm. in place yeah. to taking these kinds of positions, many of which are, they're more than 8 hour a day jobs.
Oh, absolutely. And they're thankless. I mean, sometimes they're dangerous. Sometimes mm-hmm. they're, even if they don't evoke physical danger, the mental health effects, especially if you're working for DHS or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the trauma.
Because this is child welfare workers. Yeah. This is correctional yeah. officers. This is food service in our prisons. And I mean, these are the lowest paid of the lowest paid yeah. in the state. Like the teachers are, wealthy compared to yeah. a lot of these employees already.
And I think that when you ask there has to be some altruism there. There has to be some sense of mission that you're contributing to something. The benefits are a huge part of the draw right now. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's one of the, and even that, when you begin to look at the way the state treats its retired workers, mm-hmm. We have plenty of money to give folks a cost of living increase, but instead we're chasing some arbitrary number that everybody says is meaningless, but those dollars mean real things in people's pocketbooks right now. So even those benefits are under attack. The governor, whether he meant to do it or not, it was kind of telling in his State of the State, where he said that he wanted to get these state employees in a position where they could transition into the private sector at some point. Almost like the public service was like a halfway house mm-hmm. of employment. Right, that it was like something that you graduate from.
But it's not a lifetime job anymore. No one should be a career person in the public sector.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a stopping point. It's something you settle for. And yeah. that's been the impression I've gotten from this governor and interactions with staff, that it's like, why would you do this?
Yeah.
But the history, we have a merit protection commission for a reason in this state, because the history is not so good things happen if you create situations where the political powers that be can control, who's getting hired and mm-hmm. in which position.
Yeah. Well, and not just this state. I mean, the reason that we have it in this state is because I think by human nature, if we allow people with enormous amounts of political power to hire and fire individuals as they see fit, we've historically seen, not just in Oklahoma, but at the federal level and in other states, we've seen these enormous partisan transitions mm-hmm. that leads to lack of continuity in government, lack of institutional knowledge, and again, a lack of real candor in service, mm-hmm. right? I mean, when we hire somebody to work for the state of Oklahoma, we're not hiring them to work for the governor. We're hiring them to work for the people of Oklahoma. They have a duty to the people of Oklahoma, not to a particular political party or a particular politician. I mean, they have a duty to us. And that's one of the things that we lose whenever we move away from that. Just going back to the governors, I really believe that he can't contemplate. I think it's just beyond him to contemplate a scenario in which somebody would say, "I'm going to go work for the State Department of Health, and that's going to be my career. I'm going to go work for the Department of Corrections. I'm going to go work for the Department of Public Safety." Yet, some of our most decorated Oklahomans are career civil servants. They've committed their lives to being civil servants, and even towards the end of their career, some of them have moved into really important leadership positions. But part of that's trying to communicate that level of institutional knowledge and history that they have to a new generation of leadership. I mean, that's really important for a functioning civil society. Mm-hmm. And the governor just can't see that. He really thinks that, the only reason you would take one of these jobs is because you didn't get the job as a venture capitalist that you thought you were going to get. You didn't get that job in private equity. You didn't, your startup, didn't take off. Whatever it is, I mean, he really, I think, conceptualizes of a world in which everybody just wants to be a rich guy, and if you just work at it long enough, that's just what you'll be. And so every day that you spend slogging away for a W-2 from the state of Oklahoma is a day that you're missing the opportunity to go out and get those millions of dollars that are just hiding behind a bush somewhere. If only you have some ambition and wherewithal to go get it. I really just don't think he understands it.
At ObserverCast, we think it's important to understand the current efforts to eliminate the Merit Protection Commission within the 40-year context that began with the election of President Ronald Reagan, who fired striking air traffic controllers in the early 1980s. Since then, we've seen a concerted, steady effort to erode the rights and protections of American workers, particularly when it comes to the freedom to unionize both private and public sectors and for collective bargaining rights.
Governor Keating was in office when Right to Work for Less became law in 2001 in Oklahoma. But Joseph McCartin's 2011 book, Collision Course, Ronald Reagan, the Air Traffic Controllers, and the Strike That Changed America, details the acceleration of the undermining of the power of labor unions in the U.S., particularly through work stoppages and strikes after Reagan's decisive blow to the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization in 1981.
The majority of the air traffic controllers in 1981 were not only Republicans, the union had in fact endorsed Reagan's campaign, but many also were veterans who had learned their trade in combat, had no college education, but had worked their way up to white-collar status as air traffic controllers after war. But almost none of the striking controllers ever regained a job in the industry again, suffering a lifetime blacklist, as well as a continually weakened National Labor Relations Board under Reagan and subsequent administrations that denied or slow-played their appeals to work again.
Most importantly, when Reagan allowed the striking controllers to be, quote, permanently replaced, this set the tone for striking workers for a generation. As McCartin writes, a mere whisper campaign of permanent replacements after the PATCO debacle was enough to quash a strike. Threats of bringing in permanent replacements was a tactic readily embraced by businesses, buoyed by the shift from Keynesian economics that inspired projects like FDR's New Deal to Milton Friedman's Chicago School that we now know as neoconservatism. Through the 1980s, businesses were eager to eliminate the pressure of labor unions in their workplaces, and at the threat of permanent replacements, workers slowly left work stoppages and strikes behind and began capitulating their demands for better wages and protections in order to simply keep their jobs. And so when we hear the governor talk about eliminating the merit protection system, turning our classified state workers into at-will employees who perhaps may benefit from easier bonuses and raises from supervisors, unfettered by the restriction of the merit protection system, what he's really signaling is public workers can be permanently replaced under this new system if they're not careful. Because that's what we know happens in this arrangement. It's been happening for 40 years now. In a state living under almost continual budget crisis, there simply won't be agency budgets to cavalierly offer raises. State workers hadn't gotten raises in nearly a decade before breadcrumbs were tossed their way in the last two sessions. They aren't even likely to get that this year, given that a drop in oil and gas-related tax revenues leaves the state with $85 million less to spend next year. This means state agencies will continue to struggle to keep the budget for their existing staff.
Ryan Kiesel used the phrase "lack of candor of service," the title of this episode, to describe what would happen if the Merit Protection Commission goes away, meaning state workers would lose the confidence that merit protection provides to report unsafe or unethical practices without fear of retaliation. That's exactly what happened to the remaining air traffic controllers who did not participate in the PATCO strike, and the new controllers that the government had to spend $2 billion to train as replacements. McCartan writes that in 1985, as the FAA still recovered staffing and air traffic levels from losing their skilled workers from the 1981 strike, when Republican Congressman Guy Molinari of New York began investigating a near collision between two airplanes at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, he found working controllers reluctant to speak in the open about problems, fearing the wrath of their supervisors. And when he held meetings in private, he heard horror stories confirming his suspicions that the system was at risk.
What's also interesting is the lengths President Reagan went to not only ensure the striking air traffic controllers never worked again, but also to stymie Representative Molinari's investigation and legislative efforts to protect workers in the name of public air travel safety. McCartan writes, Molinari's experience illustrated one of the most important yet underappreciated political consequences of the PATCO strike. As Reagan's confrontation with controllers emerged as a defining event of his presidency, unqualified support for his firing of controllers became a litmus test of Republican loyalty. This effectively discouraged moderate Republicans and emboldened anti-unionist conservatives.
The past truly seems prologue in this case, and once again we see old Republican Party themes emerging in Governor Stitt's agenda. We mentioned Milton Friedman and neoconservatism earlier. Governor Stitt's strategy to bring his business experience to government, the idea of running government as a business, is the exact definition of neoconservatism. It's the idea that profits and profitability matter in government. It's the political philosophy that questions the need for and validity of programs like Social Security and even the U.S. Postal Service, deeming their value and worth based on some bottom line. The problem is, what happens to that child welfare worker who is no longer classified and has a particularly tricky or sensitive case that involves a well-connected member of the community? What happens to the prison guard who is exhausted from working his or her third double shift?
Unlike the air traffic controllers, this doesn't involve planes colliding midair, but it does have life or death consequences for our children, our families, our public safety. Those are the classified workers that will lose merit protection in the name of improving bottom lines and outcomes if Senator Treats and Representative Osborne's bills pass. History already tells us how this story ends. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of ObserverCast. You can download the next episode Monday evening, March 2nd, where we'll be discussing bills moving through the legislature this session addressing criminal justice reform or the lack thereof. If you're interested in sponsoring our work here to keep ObserverCast going, please contact Arnold at ahamilton@okobserver.org for more information. Know you'll be reaching a highly engaged, information-hungry audience through your sponsorship. Please subscribe as well, share on social media if you like what you hear, and help us keep the proverbial lights on here for our podcast. Remember, there's also a year-long special if you subscribe, and you'll get a special rate on a digital subscription. We also want to thank Pat Hall and Ryan Kiesel for sitting down to talk with us for this episode. And thanks again to the Pioneer Library System and the good folks who helped us out at the Maker's Lab at the sparkling new Norman Central Library, where portions of this episode were recorded. And finally, the music you're hearing is once again by Oklahoma artist Jared Deck. His latest album, Bully Pulpit, is available for purchase on iTunes. We hope you'll give him a listen, and you can learn more about him at jareddeckmusic.com.